on this episode of DL Weekly, a new ticket offer for California residents. Fireworks are back at the park. The Disneyland Hotel has returned with some favorites.
Halloween news. Coco is expanding at the resort. Paid Fast Pass could be coming. We finish our discussion with Evan and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Ah, buenos dias, señorita. My siestas are getting shorter and shorter. Oh, look at all the people listening. Welcome to DL Weekly's Enchanted Podcast. Hey, Tag and Teresa, mi amigos. Pay attention, it's show time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 7th, 2021. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to JD, Emily C, and Pauline P for becoming supporters this week, and for Stephanie F for increasing her support of the show. Of course, this support makes DL Weekly possible. It's also really helping us on our trip that's coming up. So yes. Thank you guys so, so much for that. Of course, we have the supporter Discord chat, which is just a wonderful Disney oasis in the internet that is very fun. In fact, Pauline got in contact with us after she became a supporter, and she's very excited for the book club that we have going on. So if you want to be involved in all the stuff with the podcast, becoming a weekly tier through Patreon and joining our community Discord is the best way to do that. So if you'd like to do that, head over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
As some of you may know, July is a pretty special month for us here at DL Weekly. Not only is it both Tag and I's birthday months, it's also Disneyland's birthday. Plus, the entire DL Weekly crew will be in the parks to celebrate anything and everything Disney, because, you know, why not? But anyways, we will all be in the parks for the first time this July as well. So, four things that make this month a pretty big deal for us. So in honor of that, we decided to chat with our friends over at All Enchanting Ears, and we are doing a giveaway. So look for details. We haven't figured out what the contest will exactly be yet. However, I did just give you a major clue by telling you why July is such a fun, exciting month for DL Weekly. So put that somewhere in your noggin. But anyways, look for specific details for the giveaway, but we will be doing a giveaway this month with All Enchanting Ears. Make sure you follow All Enchanting Ears on their Instagram as well as DL Weekly on Instagram for more details.
Just a friendly reminder as well that we will be at the parks between July 17th and July 21st.
Yep, July 17th and July 21st, we will be in the parks. Also, we are hosting a DL Weekly meetup. That meetup's going to be taking place in downtown Disney on Sunday, July 18th, starting at 1 p.m. We're going to be hanging out over at the old AMC Theater seating area in downtown Disney. For those of you that may not be familiar with where the AMC Theater was, it's down by Earl of Sandwich, kind of across from where the Star Wars Trading Post is. Again, the meetup is on Sunday, July 18th, from roughly about 1 to 2 p.m., maybe a little bit longer, depending on how much is going on. But we will be taking some time away from the park that day to come and see everyone. But it was really important for us to have this meetup and to have it someplace where all weekly tiers would be able to attend. You didn't have to worry about park tickets or reservations, none of that nonsense, just some good old Disney time together.
Well, we hope we can see you there. Now let's get to the news.
A new California resident ticket offer has been announced. The tickets are good for three visits to the resort between now and September 30th of 2021 for as little as $224. For additional $55, the ticket can be upgraded to a park hopper.
So this is what we've kind of been saying that locals have wanted, which is it is a ticket that is good for three visits, and it's good until September 30th. So there's no within 14 days of first use and all that stuff. So great deal. I think if you do the park hopper with it, I think the savings is like $66.
Wow.
So great deal. If you live in California or Baja California, I think are the zip codes, you can get in under this to get your tickets. So that's very exciting. I know a lot of the locals that we're talking about in our Discord chat today were very happy about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great deal because, right, if you're local and you're living near the parks, you know, it's doing single day tickets gets really expensive really, really fast. So this is a nice option so that you can do a couple visits without having it hurt the wallet as much.
With the 4th of July, the fireworks officially returned to Disneyland. Mickey's Mixed Magic lit up the night with a special 4th of July segment added to the end. The crowds for this performance were huge and looked like Disneyland before the pandemic. Once the show was over, getting out of the park took a while since the park closed soon after. But it's great to have the fireworks back.
This was crazy. So we had a couple of listeners that were in the parks on the July 4th for the fireworks, and people were like reserving their spots and like lining up and kind of camping out hours ahead of time. I saw all sorts of different pictures from various different places of what Main Street looked like. And yeah, it just looked like a sea of people. People were very excited for the fireworks to come back. And not only was there excitement in the park, but there was a ton of excitement outside of the parks too. Fans that didn't have tickets to be inside of Disneyland actually all kind of lined up and were gathered in the Esplanade to watch fireworks from there as well. To me, Disneyland and fireworks, it's hard to imagine Disneyland without the fireworks because they're so grand and they're so iconic and they're so Disney. They're just so well done. Mm-hmm. We always joke, we actually shared a meme about this in our Discord chat about how once you've experienced Disneyland fireworks, your local 4th of July fireworks just are never the same because Disney just, they just do such a great job. So it's so exciting, so incredibly exciting for these to be back in the park.
Yes. I wish local places would just sync it with music. I know some yeah. do, but most don't. Ours don't.
Especially now with all the technology that Disney does, it's the local shows just are never going to be to that same. They just can't because they don't have projections. They don't have lasers. They don't have fog. Sure. They don't have inflatables that come up on the different buildings. They don't have somebody flying through the air on a little wire thing, you know. It's
just
crazy when you really
make it even worse.
Yeah, when you really think about like all of the different elements that come together to create a Disney fireworks spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many things.
Now, did you watch the 4th of July little thing at the end?
I didn't. I don't know. I didn't because I couldn't. I have no self-control sometimes when it comes to me not wanting to spoil things. If I like start, I'll just keep going with it. And I really,
you
I have
just
not
skipped
seen
to the 4th of July.
I know, but then I would have like, again, little self-control on this. I would have been too excited and wanted to watch the whole thing.
Sure.
I really want to experience Mickey's Mixed Magic like fresh in the park because I feel like right it's fireworks, they're never going to be quite the same on the screen.
Yeah.
So I want to have like be like amazed,
but we're not there for the 4th
in
so
person.
You're not going to miss that.
I know, but like I said,
get what you're saying.
I couldn't help myself.
They had a really cool firework. Speaking of Disney specific fireworks, they had a really cool firework, and I've seen it before. It's not like a new thing this year, but I'd forgotten about it. Is they have a shell that goes up, and it you know, because a firework is circular, right?
Mm-hmm.
What it does is the bottom part lights up red and then disappears. The middle lights up white and the last one lights up blue. So it's like red, white, blue.
Wow.
Red, white, blue. Yeah. Disney fireworks, man.
Wow.
They have some cool stuff.
Dang.
Yeah. So I would say go look at it because those fireworks are pretty dang cool.
That sounds pretty cool. Well, with the recent 4th of July celebration here in the U.S. this past week, the Disney Parks blog posted about the flag retreat ceremony and it returning to Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom on July 1st. Disneyland's flag retreat has been happening daily since the reopening on April 30th. The ceremony is one of the park's oldest traditions. The flag retreat ceremony happens daily in the late afternoon in Town Square. Check with guest services for exact timing.
I was so happy because one of the photos they had in this Disney Parks blog article was from Disneyland, and it was that one cast member who, like, they did a whole video thing on, and he was right in the middle because he's really kind of been, you know, really involved in turning it into kind of what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting, I did not know, I've never actually seen the Walt Disney World Magic Kingdom one, but apparently they pick a military member out and they help them fold the flag or do the ceremony in Disney World.
So in
Disneyland, they have everybody stand up and salute, but they actually have somebody like come out and like help them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I remembered that at Disneyland they did invite someone like they would sometimes have one of the guests help. Maybe I'm making that up, or maybe that was only specific cases, but I felt like I remembered that. But
yeah, if you haven't seen it before, it's really cool. So they come out, the color guard kind of comes out, the Disneyland band is usually there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different now because when we saw it, the Dapper Dans were also there singing.
Yep.
And it was kind of cool because as they are doing everything, the voice of Disneyland comes out and says, you know, let's salute the different people or whatever. And they're like, the Marines. And like all the Marines stand up and people clap. And it's like, you know, the Air Force and all the Air Force people in the Army, you know, Coast Guard, Navy. I want to make sure I don't leave anybody out. Space Force now? I don't know. But they call out everybody. And it's really emotional because when we watched it, it was really neat because afterwards all these like veterans like shook each other's hands and kind of like it was very emotional for them. So this is such a small thing that doesn't take Disney like any, you know, a ton of effort, but is so impactful. I'm glad it has been back since the park has been open.
Yes. Yes.
The Disneyland Hotel has reopened along with a couple of its famous establishments, Trader Sam's Enchanted Tiki Bar and the Tongariro Terrace. Both welcome guests back for their great food and drink options. The Tongariro Terrace Bar is open 11 a.m. to midnight, and Trader Sam's is open 4 p.m. to midnight. The Tongariro Terrace is open for breakfast. I couldn't find an opening time, but the bar for Tongariro Terrace opens at 11. The bars have a 90-minute window to enjoy your food and beverages to allow for more guests who are waiting to get in. So this is kind of like Oga's, where they kind of kick you out after a while.
Yep. Which, and this is only going to be something temporary, right? We've talked about this before. Trader Sam's is a like beloved establishment. However, it's not very large. So to be able to get more guests in, to be able to enjoy it and experience it, they are putting in this, you know, this 90-minute window for now. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long that stays in place and until it goes back to normal and just people can come and go as they please.
I'm excited that we can get on a wait list to get in here because I don't want to have to like wait there, but they'll put you in, they'll do the text thing.
Yeah.
So we could go check in and then.
Yeah, they were having some, Mice Chat, I believe, reported this, that they were having some issues, that there was supposed to be like a virtual wait, kind of like how Indy had like a virtual queue. They were having some issues with that, though. So you did have to go to like the host stand kind of thing, and then they would get you added to the list there, and then you'd be sent a text message once it was your turn. So that was kind of like you said, what they were doing in Downtown Disney with some of the with some of the shops there. One thing that I don't think we touch on later that I wanted to talk about with this is with the Disneyland Hotel reopening, they also did a lot of updates to the hotel and like to the hotel rooms and the hotel itself. So the big things were the rooms though, and like some of the hallways and stuff. Some of the hallways have like Mary Blair inspired like artwork and flooring. The hotel rooms themselves look really nice. They updated the carpets, the bedding's different, the beds are slightly different, just look really nice, really fresh. There are some really great photos, I believe, from the Disney food blog. They did like a room tour of a Disneyland hotel room, and they had comparison to what the rooms looked like before that. I don't know, I thought it was really fun. But anyways, we can link that in the show notes if anyone is interested to see what the rooms at the Disneyland Hotel look like now. Trader Sam is celebrating at the Disneyland Hotel. The Enchanted Tiki Bar opened in 2011, making this their 10th year. To celebrate, a limited edition pin inspired by the exterior of the location is now for sale. The pin opens up to reveal a zombie head mug along with a tiki. The pin is limited to 3,000 pins and is available on ShopDisney.com for $19.99.
I didn't know. So I don't know. My brain, like my history of the Disneyland Hotel is like all over the place. For some reason, I thought Trader Sam's has been there like forever. The fact that it's only been 10 years is crazy.
It does feel like it's been there like forever. I thought the same thing too. The other thing that I thought was kind of crazy, and please, if you have seen this pin elsewhere, let us know. I thought it was crazy that the pin was supposedly just only online. I was like all excited and wanting to like go buy one while we're there, like go try and see if I could buy one when we're there. Maybe even like maybe not Trader Sam's is selling them. Maybe Pin Traders though has them. So I'm a little sad about that it's just an online thing. So maybe that's wrong though. Maybe they are in the parks as well. If you know or if you've seen them in the parks, please let us know.
It's still available.
That's
online.
The other thing I'm not understanding either is if there was only 3,000 of these pins, how are they not gone? They've been out for a few days now.
It is just the beginning of summer, but it's so hard not to look forward to fall and Halloween.
It is the next like big major holiday.
That's true. The park, well, you've got Labor Day too.
Like, which, but like okay. That people like decorate and go all out for.
Okay. The park calendar has the Haunted Mansion going down for refurb from August 15th through September 3rd. This typically means only one thing. Haunted Mansion Holiday could be returning this year. Disney has not confirmed this at this time, but it seems likely.
Oh, it seems super likely, because, yeah.
It just came out of a refurbishment.
It just came out of a refurbishment, and the timing of this refurbishment, very, very suspect.
I just did not want to say for sure that that's what it is. And then it's just a glitch
else.
Or something.
Yeah, have it be something totally else.
So
yeah.
We're just trying to...
Oh. Or somebody didn't update the auto whatever calendar, and so they've got... You know how like you have reoccurring events on your personal calendar? Maybe someone forgot to...
They're like, every year from like mid-August to the beginning of September, Haunted Mansion goes down. Are you excited for this?
I am excited. I'm actually a little... We talked about this... Oh, it was a while back. We were talking about if we thought... the holiday overlay, if it'd be coming back this year. I'm a little surprised that I'm happy that it is, but I'm also a little surprised that it is. The whole reason the mansion went, well, not the whole reason, one of the reasons the mansion went down for refurbishment after the overlay was taken off last year, because it did.
Year before last.
Yeah, year before last. I just like 2020 apparently in my mind just didn't exist, so I just kind of skip over it.
I mean, it was closed.
You know, it went down for refurbishment, and one of the main things is that they were having to fix some things because of, like, damage that the overlay had done. So I kind of was thinking that since the parks didn't open, you know, we didn't have a full year of it being just the regular mansion with it being nice, bright, and shiny and new. Well, as shiny and bright as a Haunted Mansion can be. I kind of thought that they would maybe not do it this year, A, because... of we're coming, you know, it's just a different year for the parks right now, but also B, to kind of let everyone enjoy the mansion for what it is and not have these two extended periods for it to be closed.
Right.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I'm also surprised. I thought that I didn't know that they were going to get into the swing of things so quickly, but I feel like this whole thing I've been surprised by, because like the masks went away so quickly and social distancing went away so quickly. Like everything's gone away so quickly. It's like, well, I guess why wouldn't they be bringing back stuff?
Yeah.
But I want them to have a freaking Oogie Boogie Bash. They haven't announced that yet. That's what they should be bringing.
There's rumors.
I know there's rumors, but I feel like it's getting late.
Yeah, I just don't know on that one. I just don't know.
We don't report on this later, but I also saw that Entertainment is bringing back like 60 cast members that are supposed to work on a parade for DCA.
Yeah. Supposedly.
And Fantasmic, possibly.
Supposedly. So, who knows? I don't believe these things until I hear them from Disney.
But Fantasmic, they said, like, late summer, early fall.
Yeah, that was someone's guess was late summer, early fall. So, I'll believe it when I see it and when it's announced.
I just want, like, you, kind of, and I just want to, like, be there on the birthday and be like, oh my gosh, Fantasmic's playing.
You never know. There's Disney magic everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, guests are once again enjoying the frosty peaks of Matterhorn Mountain since it has reopened officially as of July 2nd. However, they did actually open it a day early. It was reopened on the 1st for lucky guests that were there on July 1st. Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln also returned to the Opera House this week for guests to enjoy and take in some great and much needed air conditioning.
So two classic attractions back. Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln did have...
Poor Lincoln.
He had some mechanical issues due to the fact that he has...
Stage fright
due to the fact that he had not been on stage throughout the pandemic. So that was a big thing. And then, of course, Matterhorn Mountain, I'm just excited that it's back.
Yeah.
Because was it open the last time we were there?
It was, yeah.
Okay. I feel like for some reason it's been so long, because we had that whole section of it fall off and like all of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time. So I'm hoping that it's good. I didn't see any reports anywhere on like how the ride was, like if they fixed any parts of the track or anything. I just heard that like it's open and it was great to have it back. So hopefully it'll be nice when we're there. Well, Coco is coming to the parks, but not exactly in the way we had imagined. Of course, Teresa and I have talked about them replacing the Frozen show in DCA with Coco. On July 17th, a new Coco scene will be coming to Disney's PhilharMagic in Disney California Adventure. Un Poco Loco will anchor the scene with Germaine Franco, one of the original composers from the movie, producing the score that is unique to the show. Disneyland Paris will also debut the edition on the same day, with Disney World getting it for their 50th anniversary.
You know, maybe my Coco stage show isn't too far off. Maybe they're like building the excitement with this added scene for PhilharMagic.
Maybe. I think it'd be cool.
I'm really excited about this.
Fuller Magic is one of those shows that I feel like they could continuously update add stuff, but they just haven't. What do you think of Fillhar Magic?
I think Fillhar Magic's fun, but it's not necessarily at the top of my must-do list of things. Like, I really always wanted to do Mickey and the Magical Map. Even though it wasn't my most favorite thing, I did always want to make sure that I caught the Frozen show over at the Hyperion.
Sure.
But for me, the Fillhar Magic, yes, it's fun, but again, not like anywhere near the top of my must do. I wouldn't be sad if I missed it. It's cute, yeah. So I think it's fun, and this will kind of like revitalize it a little bit and make it a little bit more like fun, new, and interesting for us park goers that have seen it a couple of times to like build the excitement back up for it again.
I have to put this in the show because I love this. Chris in our chat said the Oogie Boogies No Cooties Bash.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Alex first said Oogie Boogies Not So Big Bash.
Yeah.
And then the Oogie Boogie No Cooties Pass. Disneyland Paris welcomed guests to its park recently, and with that, a new Fast Pass option that may come to the U.S. parks as well. Premier Access, not to be confused with the same name as Disney Plus Premier Access, allows guests to purchase one Premier Access at a time, ranging from $9.50 to $17.75. depending on your attraction. Some attractions will also have a virtual queue, which could mean the only way to ride an attraction is to pay for it. So to kind of this is kind of in a way how they did it before with ticket books. So you would basically, in essence, be paying for fast passes, but each fast pass, depending on the attraction, might only be $5. It might be $10. It's not even like it's a set price per attraction. It ranges all over the place. So, yeah. This is just a rumor. This is totally a rumor. It is in Disneyland Paris, but it is totally a rumor whether or not it is coming to the parks. Nothing for sure for U.S. parks, but this is happening in Disneyland Paris.
So, I have a couple thoughts. One, I feel like I kind of asked for this. We talked about having a lower, but my caveat was that it has to be a lower entrance fee. They're not lowering the entrance fee. It's still the same admission fee, but then if you want to get in with these FastPass options. The attractions are trying to pay for themselves, right, with this option. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that particular aspect of it. However, I also don't like the fact that I was surprised. I thought Premier Access was just going to be like a Max Pass, right? Like, it was maybe a little bit more expensive. But then I was reading it, and I'm like, oh, this is per attraction.
I like don't feel comfortable with this because I'm thinking about what your typical Disney day is. And one of the things that justifies the higher price, right, is that you can get on these attractions. FastPass, is that maybe something that they were trying to do and be nice to like help you get ahead of some of the lines and like whatever? Sure. But I can't imagine doing a day at Disney, let alone a multiple days at Disney, and having to pay for things like Splash Mountain or the Haunted Mansion or Rise of the Resistance, then I feel like you'd be limiting yourself. I wouldn't be riding attractions as often as I do now because cha-ching, cha-ching every time I get on there. So I just, I'm not.
I mean, you could still wait in the standby line.
Well, in some of them, it sounded like there wouldn't be, though.
Well, so what the article said was if the attraction had a very long line, it would turn into a virtual queue, which may only be accessible through this Premier Access.
I don't know. I feel like
By the way, terrible name. Why do you have a Disney Plus Premier Access and now you have a Premier Access? It's dumb marketing. Yeah.
So this was something interesting, and I think you'll think this. You'll be intrigued by this as well.
I'm excited to hear about this.
Chat reported on this, and I was actually decided to read in the comments section, and there were a couple of individuals that grab my attention.
Sure.
They actually think that Disney is, so they think that this is not Disney trying to just like nickel and dime and squeeze every last dollar that they can out of the guests.
Sure.
These people said that they like either new cast members or former cast members, whatever. But basically they said they were of the opinion that Disney did the Fast Pass thing And it's been a huge thorn in their side, and they're really not happy with it. So these people were hypothesizing if whether or not Disney is using this as a way to try and, like, make fast passes look very undesirable so then they can get rid of them.
Well, why don't they just get rid of them?
I don't know. But that was
Disney got rid of the annual passes.
That was in the conversation there. So I was like, well, that's interesting.
Now, my counterargument...
That'd be a really weird way to do it, but that's interesting.
My counterargument is just get rid of FastPass, because they got rid of the annual pass program, which most people actually have been fairly okay with. They just want a better ticket deal, like the one that they did. So I think if they do stuff like that, boom. I don't like this idea. In my mind, this goes against everything Walt ever wanted, which was, like, it should be affordable for families to go and enjoy here. Mm-hmm. If you start charging for things like this and it becomes so difficult to get on, like, anything without having to pay for extra access, what if I save for a long time? Because they don't change the gate entrance fee.
No.
So what if, like, my family goes, let's say I'm a family of four and I pay my entrance pass, but that's all I can afford. It's a once in a lifetime vacation at Disneyland for my family. And I can't get on anything. I can go on, like, three attractions that day.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, but it's one of those, it's interesting. I guess the only way that I'd be okay with this is if you can, if they still make the standby line, if, like, the standby line 100% is always going to be an option. The thing that made me really uncomfortable about this was saying that there may be some attractions that the only way you get on is if you pay. Like, I'm not okay with that. If somebody wants to spend the extra money to jump ahead of the line, in essence, that's your thing. Maybe I would do that every once in a while, but I wouldn't use it super often, because that gets expensive and that adds up very quickly.
Not to get political, but don't we already have an income equality problem in our country, and wouldn't this just exacerbate that I don't have to wait? And then other people, you know what I mean?
It just feels
dirty.
But there's also you can also pay for a plaid to take you around, and a plaid, like, is like the ultimate fast pass, because you don't have to wait in the fast pass line. So,
I,
you know, there's that too.
Say that there are two people in our live chat right now, Chris and Chris, funny enough, that both said that they would pay for it. Chris says, for the convenience, it's worth it. That Chris M. And Chris J. said they would pay for Rise of the Resistance, $20 per person. I would pay $20 to get on Rise if I could not have to deal with that crap in the morning.
I think it's just interesting that it's per attraction. I would have thought that if they were going to have a paid system, that basically it would be like MaxPass was, but just at a much higher dollar level.
Right.
So maybe instead of, I don't even remember, it's been so long since MaxPass was a thing that I can't remember, maybe it's like extra $50.
Universal's been doing stuff like that for a long time. They have, it's part of your ticket. You just buy a different ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It was called like the VIP or front of the line pass or something. Yeah. And it allowed you to get one time each attraction, skip the line, and paid that extra, and you went in a separate entrance to only people that have this pass, and you basically, it was even faster than FastPass. You just got, like, right on almost. And that's been around for a long time, but they didn't have a fast pass. So basically, you were either standby or you were this VIP pass thing. That's an okay, I guess, way to do it. I think it just matters. The part I don't like is per attraction. Don't like that. And if they made it really expensive, so less people took advantage of it, and then standby wasn't as big of an inconvenience as it is with normal FastPass, I think I'd be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like the idea that they're doing this. Why? Like, I understand they're trying to make money, and there's lots of reasons, I'm sure, but I just don't like this whole aspect of it, I guess.
It's interesting, and that's why I thought the thread in the comments of Mice Chat, which, I mean, take that with a grain of salt. It's just people, you know, airing their opinions. But I thought it was a really, I never would have thought of it that way. But, you know, it was a really interesting thought of maybe this was Disney trying to make the problem, you know, the problem that they have seen with FastPass. And they're trying to make it undesirable so that it's, like, accepted that it's gone instead of it being this whole, like, thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's interesting. So, like, and the other thing too, right, they have to remember is MaxPass, when I had my AP, adding MaxPass to my AP was pennies not even not pennies a day, but it was like dollars a day, if not
it was
like
way cheaper
change
than,
a day.
Yeah.
Way cheaper. When you're adding MaxPass to your
park
ticket.
But that included PhotoPass too.
Yep. I think it was $20 per day for like your park ticket. So we don't have an AP type program right now. So this paid per system, depending on when it came out, could be whether you've got the AP or whether you're just a vacationer type, you know, day visitor type of thing. So I feel like this is going to add up no matter how you vacation.
Well, this
at
brings
Disneyland.
Back the conversation we've been having, which is I'm excited and scared to see what they come out yeah. with the AP program
yeah,
because
yeah. it'll be interesting.
I'm sure people are going to be mad or some people. I'll tell you the other thing. I read a lot of the comments on the Mice Chat article too. And a lot of people, when they talked about crowds, are very happy with how things
oh,
are right
yeah.
now. They said, you know what? Without FastPass, the lines are
yeah.
moving well.
Yeah.
You know, the park is busy, but it doesn't feel unmanageable.
You know, it's interesting because I was even seeing things like, try and get to the parks before they bring back some sort of a program
yeah.
because it is amazing right now. So, yeah.
And I feel we have supporters in our community who really enjoy going to the parks a lot
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to, you know, be nickel and dimed and not be able to go because
right.
it's been something they've been able to do and they really love it. And I don't want them to not be able to go. But at the same time, I feel like we got to look at the bigger picture. Do we want it to be a nice place for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
It's an interesting time for Disney just in general because they had these things that they put out for, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they put out fast passes for whatever the reasonings was. They created the annual pass holder program for whatever these reasons are. Well, but they didn't, both of these programs, I don't think they looked at, I think they looked at like the foreseeable future. They didn't think really long term
sure.
with it. And so now that it's been long term, they've kind of become pinch points, like you've said, because FastPass has made the standby lines move
terrible.
Much slower. Annual pass holders were just filling up the parks faster than, you know, than if they didn't have it. So it's just interesting that they're using this time and kind of like reevaluating, and they have this really unique opportunity to reset some
yeah.
of these programs and kind of like fix them to make them work better.
We just have to hope that whatever they choose is not worse than
Ooh,
what they replaced.
I'm hopeful.
With all the great happy news coming out of the resort lately, there is a bit of disappointing news as well. Steakhouse 55 at the Disneyland Hotel, along with the PCH Grill at Disney's Paradise Pier Hotel, are permanently closed. Disneyland officials have said that, quote, options are being considered, end quote, for both locations.
This is, like, kind of an iconic place. Not every Disneyland goer even maybe knows that Steakhouse 55 existed, but there was a steakhouse in the Disneyland Hotel basically since the beginning. So it's pretty sad and very bittersweet that this location is permanently closed. I do hold out hope because all of the articles that I've read have kind of said that the location is closing, not the restaurant, if that makes sense. So they
it's
may be finding
it or something.
Well, they may be so Steakhouse 55 may exist again in the future, just not in the exact space
sure.
that it was now. So I do hold out some hope that hopefully they will be able to get these restaurants in different areas. Maybe not. That might just me being like extra, extra hopeful. But I was a little sad because Steakhouse 55 was actually like a Disney bucket list place for me because it's like higher end. It's in the hotel. It's not in the parks.
Our community
you
manager
know,
Kate said that's where they have like the tea
parties. The tea party, like the themed different tea time things were there. Yeah, all sorts of really cool.
I feel like they need to use this name again because I think Steakhouse 55 is a great name for a steakhouse.
It is, yeah,
like it sounds classy, but also ties in with Disneyland. PCH Grill. I've heard things about it. I really don't know too much about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't
Paradise
know
Pier.
Either. It's it, you know from reading about the history of the Paradise Pier Hotel, I do feel for them because they haven't quite been able to figure out what's going to work well for them food-wise and restaurant-wise for that location. They've gone through a couple of different things, so I'm not as surprised or as sad that the PCH Grill is no longer, but
sure.
yeah, the Steakhouse 55 did hit.
Yep.
Well, the World of Color Lagoon has some sad sights for fans of the nighttime show. The wooden structures that house the show lighting near Pixar Pier have been removed, showing extensive work in progress. This means that it is unlikely that the show will return in the near future.
We kind of talked about this a little bit before. There were some pictures online of the wood of these things rotting. I'm almost wondering if they're going to replace these with something that's going to be more durable
Maybe.
Than wood, because something that's going to work better with water all the time and being out in the hot California sun. You know, this will be one of those things, like, I thought this would have been something that would be nice for them to bring back because it doesn't require a huge cast or anything like that. However, it seems like it has to go through some maintenance, which is fine. I'd like it to be 100%.
Like you said, I just feel bad because it seems like it wasn't that long ago that they were doing some extensive work on the actual, the fountains and the thing, like this,
the platforms
and all that stuff. So I just feel bad that this really wonderful nighttime show has, you know, so much maintenance and so much extra work to kind of keep it going. It's unfortunate because you kind of take for granted those stuff because, right, it sits in water all the time. So for obviously it's going to need
water,
a little extra.
Kills everything.
Yeah, it needs a little extra help now and then versus, you know, like a parade or something like that. So it's a great show. Like you, I'm sad that it's not returning sooner. It would have been much easier for this to return, but we will just
patiently
wait. I
want to try that dessert package that we saw that one time. That was kind of my excitement.
Mm-hmm.
That's also one of the reasons I wanted Fantasmic to come back is because I thought the Blue Bayou was a lot better deal when you do the dining package. So anyway, Maurice's Treats. I know you're excited.
I am.
Because you love Maurice's Treats. Maurice's Treats at the Princess Fantasy Fair has a new sweet menu item. The new item is a trio of Madeline cookies themed to Snow White, Belle, and Aurora. Snow White is flavored like chocolate chips. Belle has a citrus flavor, and Aurora tastes like raspberry. The treats have a mild flavor and are not overly sweet. They are not on the menu, so guests may have to ask for them. The trio is $6.49. They're also decorated to look like the princesses.
Oh, they're so cute. They're so cute. You know, and I was actually surprised that you got three treats for $6.49. I thought that was for Disney treat prices.
That's a good deal.
I thought that was a really good deal. I think this might be something I'm going to have to try. I've never had this type of cookie, a Madeline cookie, before. They're so cute, though. Tag is sharing the photos from the Disney food blog, and of course we will have the link in our show notes, but they're just so adorably decorated.
So I'm only gonna eat one of these because I hate the hard round things that they have on Snow White. I also hate raw sugar, so I think I'll only eat Belle.
It's a citrus flavor, though.
Oh, dang it. What it got me is I clicked over because this was something they had before.
I know.
And where is it? I clicked this one.
The Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo cake.
But was that in Disney World? Yeah, Disney Springs.
Oh, that one's not very cute.
Well, look at that. That looks really good on the inside. Yes.
That one's cute.
Look at that. Oh, that looks good. That's not even at Disneyland, though, is it?
Mm-mm.
No. Dang.
Oh, no. I don't know. It says Main Street Bakery, but I don't know.
That was in World.
But yeah.
I would try these.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be buying so much from Maurice's because we've got the apple
basically
thing,
everything that they offer. We're going to
buy the garlic thing,
the poison apple freeze, and the cheddar garlic twist.
Totally off topic, on topic, but like not podcast related. That's funny. So today, James and I were watching an episode of the latest season of The Great Food Truck Race, and one of the teams was making shawarmas, and I was like, shawarmas,
yeah. Luca fans, including myself, will be very excited for this next DIY treat. Luca director Enrico Casarosa has posted his recipe for Taranta al Pesto. The recipe provides step-by-step instructions that are also illustrated with characters from Luca. They're super adorable. This is definitely something that we're going to have to try and make soon. Yum, it looks so good. So I thought, like, in the movie it looked amazing and delicious, but then reading through the recipe and seeing some of the things that were in it that I didn't notice makes me even more excited to try this.
I like that they put the characters and stuff.
I know, I think it's so
it
cute.
It seems like a fairly easy recipe, and it looks good.
That's from the movie.
Oh, that's from the movie?
Isn't that crazy?
It looks almost
Pixar
real.
Animation is so good that you thought that was a real
I
photo.
I love pesto, and they were really about eating this in the movie, so I'm excited to try something like this. It's so cute.
It has potatoes in it, though.
And I think
that's what I was, like, surprised about and, like, made me even more interested in it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know it had potatoes in it. I put this story in for you. A new Loungefly backpack has been spotted in the parks. This one is unique in that you can attach your mini headband to the backpack, adding some additional flair. The bag itself is white with mini ear headbands in different colors. The backpack is for sale at World of Disney for $75. What do you think of this?
I think this is interesting. I wasn't quite understanding the draw before because I'm like, well, I don't know. But then when I saw how they had it set up and, like, how it worked so that your ears, like, stick up out of the bag, it made it like clicked and it made sense. So most Disney Loungefly bags have ears, and like that's part of the design of the bag. This one, however, does not. So you can customize the bag by putting like the headband part of your ears in the backpack. It straps in there so it's nice and secure. And so then the ears and the bow are poking up out of the top. So then your ears become like the mini backpack ears. Does that make sense? Like the ears for the mini backpack.
Yeah.
I thought it was super cute. I was thinking it was going to be like a like more of a storage thing, but it's actually more of like a way to customize and accessorize your Loungefly bag.
I just thought this was so you because you have all these mini headbands. You could have the one backpack and swap the ears. Yep. Boom.
Yep.
And it'd
yep.
be like a ton of different things. So,
I thought it was very clever. Like I said, I wasn't quite understanding it at first, but then seeing the little photos of the tag explaining how it worked made sense.
Question. Is $75 the normal-ish price for a lounge fry?
Yes.
Well, no. For some reason, I thought they were more expensive. Like, I thought this one was a deal.
So, it depends. Sometimes I've seen them, like, new. I've seen them new, like, as high as $90, but I've also seen them down in the $70, $75 range.
That's not as terrible as I thought for some reason.
Yeah. Yes and no. Like,
they're tiny, aren't they?
They are. Yep. They're little. So, it's interesting because some of them... And I don't know what the difference is. Like, I don't know. I'm not a Loungefly bag connoisseur by any means, but I have seen they do kind of range.
Psst. Avast there. It'd be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be trivia questions lurking in every cove, waiting to be answered. Listen close. And keep your ruddy Disney knowledge handy. That be the best way to answer correctly. And mark well me words, mateys. Dead men tell no tales. Here come seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place. But keep a weather eye open, mates. And hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. Let's get things started with a bunch of listener questions and even a bonus question from yours truly. Question number one from Matthew J. What colors were the original People Mover cars?
Ooh, there was like a red one.
A blue one.
And like a blue one. Was there a yellow one? I feel like there was a yellow one. Okay, hang on. Red...
I know there was red and blue for sure.
I think there was like purple. A yellow.
I think there was a purple.
I don't think it was a purple.
Well, write me down for purple. Orange?
Like an orange?
For some reason, I only really remember red and blue and purple, I think.
Well, and I'm trying to... I think there was like a teal or like a green. I don't know like which way it was.
I like how you said green and Christopher said, I don't remember a green.
I thought there was like a bluish, tealish.
Oh, teal.
Yeah.
Yeah, teal.
Like a blue teal.
Yeah, because it's like a light blue.
Mm-hmm.
That is right. I believe that.
But was it blue? I don't think so. Was there not a blue blue?
Yeah, I think that there was a blue and a teal. Okay. Or it might have just been a teal.
Red.
If we answer
orange,
too many,
yellow,
do we get
teal.
It wrong?
How many colors?
Yeah.
Can we have a hint? How many colors were there?
Four.
One, two, three. So, okay. I'm saying that there was red, yellow, orange, and teal.
I'm saying there was red, teal, purple, orange, I guess.
Yeah, if it didn't cut you off, we just go Joseph the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat on this one. Anyway, question number two from Jill M. What attraction was designed simultaneously for the parks on both U.S. coasts?
Simultaneously.
Was it, I feel like there's multiples, because, like, you could argue that...
Yeah, but at the same time. Because sometimes it was, like, right afterwards.
Designed or built?
Designed simultaneously.
See? Because, like...
I think Big Thunder, because they happened around the same time at both parks.
Why?
So I'm going to say Big Thunder.
Not tours. Not space. I'm trying to think when Splash opened at World.
Splash was later. Because they redesigned everything because they had the double.
The only thing that I can think of is recent stuff, like Rise, because they planned Rise.
Oh, that's true.
And Smuggler's
Run. Are we looking
for
old or new, James?
Like, those were both planned
Rise
at the same time.
Rise and of Smugglers. The Resistance and Smuggler's Run were developed at the same time as well.
You know, there's probably some truth to that, but we're not talking quite that recently.
Okay. We demand points for that, though. No,
I mean, I feel obligated to recognize points. That one.
I'm going to say Big Thunder. That's my final answer, as Vern would ask for.
I don't think Big Thunder. I feel like there was a like lag there.
There was a lag for Space Mountain. I know that.
Yeah, there's lag for space. Maybe it's not even like a big Soarin'.
No, Soarin' was way later at Epcot.
Yeah. You're right. Because it was Around the World, and that's why we got Around the World.
Do you have an answer?
I'm just going to go with Splash, which was my first thought. So you thought Big Thunder.
Yep.
All right, our third question. What order do the princess boats take center stage during Fantasmic?
Oh, boy.
Oh, wait, I got to think.
So Snow. Is Snow there anymore?
Hold on. You're talking, and I'm trying to think of the music. Oh, like the new one or the old one? Because I feel like the new one incorporates Tangled in there.
Mm-hmm, it does. Which Tangled is the last one. I know that.
Well, there's Beauty and the Beast and The Little Mermaid.
I think it starts with Beauty and the Beast.
And Cinderella?
No. I think it's Beauty and the Beast.
I think it's Beauty and the Beast as well, because I think they go back to Beauty and the Beast.
I think it's Beauty and the Beast, then Little Mermaid, and then Tangled.
Yeah, I think there's just three. Or is there four?
Because Tangled replaced Snow White.
All right, are you confident with your answer?
Fine, yeah.
Okay.
So just to be clear, we're going with Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Tangled?
Yes.
All right. Question number four from Donna S. What is the average speed of the Matterhorn bobsleds?
Ooh.
Average speed?
Yes. What is the average speed?
12 miles an hour.
I was seriously thinking 12. Okay. We'll go 12.
You two are connected on this.
And probably totally wrong.
Probably totally wrong. But let's go with it anyway. And as I said, I have a bonus question this week. On July 7th, 2003.
July 7th?
July 7th.
Okay.
So 18 years ahead of when this episode released, Disney legend Chuck Abbott passed away. He was one of the original Disney cast members and helped with several attractions, including working with Walt on Pirates. During his time there, he was named Foreman of the Year for his work on which attraction? And I'll give you a hint, it wasn't Pirates.
Well, thanks for that one. That's the hint?
You've
ruled one attraction out. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't throw it in the question if I was going to do that, would I?
I don't know. Haunted Mansion.
Foreman of the Year, though?
You ask questions that make Teresa think too much, James.
So when I think foreman, I think something more like...
Like construction?
Yeah, so like...
Well, pick something.
Foreman. I'm going to say the Matterhorn. I really don't know. So you're going Haunted Mansion?
Yeah.
All right, Teresa, you're overthinking this one. I need an answer.
Okay, fine. I'll go with the monorail.
Monorail. All right. How'd you do? How'd you think they did? Find out real soon, but first, this week's discussion topic.
This week for our discussion topic, we are continuing our interview with Evan, who works for the Walt Disney Company, and I think the second half of this interview is just going to be awesome for you guys, so enjoy.
The Disney Cruise Line.
Yeah.
One of the things, so somebody, one of our community managers posted a bingo chart, and everybody marked off all their like Disney things that they've ever done. The one thing that nobody marked off was a Disney cruise, so...
That's sad. I feel sad. I've never gone on a cruise personally, but Disney cruise. Yeah,
I've been on a cruise, but not a Disney cruise.
If I'm doing a cruise, I'm doing a Disney cruise.
Yeah. Sure.
So tell us about
the
your
new boat. I'm off.
I actually got. Boat, I booked it. Wish. I'm going.
Did you?
On the Wish.
Oh, it looks amazing.
I still haven't watched anything about it. I keep seeing stuff. Oh, I haven't watched it.
I keep seeing all I'm seeing is like these little teaser things. I haven't watched anything that was super in depth, and I'm blown away.
All of those all of those teaser spots or they had a big like 30-minute special. My grader team produced that. Like we filmed it and edited it and and stuff.
There's a 30 minute thing. I need to find the 30.
That's what I was talking about. There was like a whole promo thing for it. That's like half an hour.
I was waiting for him to be like, yeah, that was me.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, broadcast production and Disney Life and entertainment is huge. So it was like my greater team, but like not my direct team, I know the people who are working on that.
That's still so cool. So Evan's done everything from like door handle things to cheapers.
So tell us about your time on the cruise line. So when you started there, did you do the same role the whole time you were on the cruise line?
Yeah, I did the same role the whole time. I started off on the Disney Dream and then did the Disney Fantasy and also did the Disney Wonder and kind of went back and forth between all of those ships. I never got to do the Magic, but there was the potential for me to do the Magic in the future if I had stayed. But I needed to get off the ship so I could get a job on land. And
yeah.
I mean, when you want to have a kid, you have to first get a job. Well, you need a job, you need a car, you need a house, and all of that stuff. So
yeah, kind of important. I love your thing here. So right, we got to work at, you worked at all the parks, and now you've almost worked on all the cruise ships. So was one of the ships more your favorite, or did you love them equally?
I mean, there were things that I love. I mean, it's like they're my children. I love them.
Yeah, right.
Disney Cruise Line still kind of feels like home because I lived there for so long. Sure. And everybody on board kind of becomes family because like in the real world, and by real world, I mean, all of you land lovers out there, but there is a distinct separation between work life and your regular life.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Sometimes those lines don't cross, but you could be working, doing your job throughout the entire day. And then work's done. And then you're still hanging out with the same people that you were working with, even your leader. So you can't really afford to build up those walls between and separating your work and regular life. You have to kind of integrate them. So it still kind of feels like home. The crew still feels like family. There's things that I love differently about all of the ships. The Dream, I love that we got to go to Castaway Cay so often because they were doing, I think they still are, 3 and 4 day cruises in each of those go to Castaway Cay, and I loved Castaway Cay. Every time I would go there, I would do a run around the island, and then I would end at the crew beach. There's a special part of the beach that's only for crew members. They would be grilling up hamburgers, and they had hammocks. So I'd go for a run and go get a hamburger, and then go sit in a hammock by the beach. Love that about the Dream. The Fantasy had amazing cruises, 7 days. Western Caribbean, Eastern Caribbean. I loved going to the Virgin Islands. Oh my gosh, they're beautiful. And then on the Wonder, I spent an entire summer in Alaska. And Alaska is just, oh my gosh, just talk about beautiful. Alaska is amazing. There are things that I love about every ship.
Cool.
So tell us, I looked into this a little bit, not the Disney Cruise Line, but just in general cruise lines.
Yeah.
What is it like living on board the cruise ship? Because like you said earlier, you know, you work a lot of hours and stuff. I think some people think, oh, you work your 8-hour shift, and then you basically just become a passenger. And you basically cruise around forever. But that's not the case.
No, it's a lot of work. They say that if you last your first or second contract, and so a contract is basically you sign something saying I'm going to be at sea for this long, and you can only be at sea for so long before they have to give you some time on land. So that's basically what a contract is. If you talk to a crew member, they might ask you, well, how many contracts have you done? So they say that if you survive one, maybe two contracts, then you're probably a good fit. Because it's really hard. You're away from family. You have limited access to internet, pretty much no phone access. Trading your good Wi-Fi hotspots is like a black market on board the ship because it's like I might be going to like, I don't know, I might be going to like the Cayman Islands or something. And it's like, where are you getting good Wi-Fi, you know? So it was hard. And you work 7 days a week for like, anywhere between 70 and 80 hours a week, and small cabins, not a whole lot of personal space. But you have to be passionate about what you're doing. And that's what I mean when I say the people who are meant to do it last beyond their first contract, because the people who stay, they're the ones who are extremely passionate about what they do. And that's why when you go on a cruise, I mean, a Disney cruise, of course, but I'm sure other cruises too, you get such a great service because those people who are in those roles, they are really passionate. Like for how much they love what they're doing, it's really hard on the other side of that. But it's so worth it because you meet so many amazing people from all over the world. They're going out and just looking out at the ocean every single day is amazing. Traveling is amazing. The lifestyle is just so adventurous. So it's hard because you're working so much. It's hard because you have limited connection to the outside world. But I mean, on the other end of that, I kind of loved being disconnected too in a way. I remember if I was out of Port Canaveral in Florida, I would leave my car at the crew parking lot. And if it was like my 5 months are up and I'm headed back to Orlando, I would get in my car and I would be driving back to Orlando. It's about an hour drive. And I would turn the radio on and I wouldn't know like any song on the radio. I was like, I remember being like, I don't know what it is about a Gangnam Style or what the Fox says. Like that blew my mind. I remember driving back and hearing those songs on the radio constantly. I'm like, what is this? Or I wouldn't know a single movie in theaters, but it was still really cool. So it was, sorry, long answer.
No.
It was difficult, but also on the other end, it was like one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
I just can't imagine being that disconnected.
Yeah, I was going to say how surreal and probably like, I'm
it's
sure.
It's kind of freeing though, because imagine like the last few years with all the news.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
To just not have to hear any of that.
Yes. It was so refreshing to feel like you were, if it really did feel like a disconnection from the world's problems. You felt like you were in your own world, separated from everything else that's going on everywhere else.
And it was like a Disney bubble. So it's like the perfect place to be living if you're going to be disconnected from reality.
Yeah, I could get off work and there's a movie theater on board. I go and watch some Disney movies or go see one of the Disney Broadway style shows on board. Or
that's so cool.
Like that was just my free time. Like, I've got 2 hours of a break. Let me go watch Believe in the Walt Disney Theater, you know?
That's so cool. So that kind of leads into what my next question was, because with such, you know, long hours and not, you know, maybe not ideal working conditions for everyone, what did you have any sort of like perks being a crew member, or like some cool things that you got to do, or like thank yous that they did for? I mean, I think a private beach on Castaway Cay and hamburgers sounds pretty amazing. But right. Were there any other types of things like that?
So that was actually my wife's job on board. She was the crew activities manager on board. So
of course they have a role for it. It's
yeah, yeah. A lot of companies don't have that.
Yeah.
But Disney wanted, and the crew activities manager is basically the cruise director for the crew members. And that's Disney is one of the few ships or one of the few cruise line companies that has that person. And she was in charge of all of the crew spaces. So there were crew lounges, a crew bar, there were crew decks where we would have after hours parties. So like if it was like Halloween or something, we'd have our own Halloween party just as like we had some form of normal life, you know?
Yeah.
Or my wife, she would schedule like, oh, we're going to be in St. Thomas. Let's organize a run where we all go for like a run together. Or she would plan like crew excursions where we'd rent a catamaran and there was like a budget for it, or you have to pay like a small fee. But then the crew would all just go on like catamaran rides and stuff. So there was definitely a lot. What you got to do on board varied by your position. If you were petty officer and higher, then you got to go into guest areas with certain limitations, but general crew, which make up maybe around 70% of the crew on board, they unless they're working, they have to stay backstage. So that's why we have all of those crew areas backstage. So like the lounges and the bar and other areas too, like a crew gym where you still felt like you had a home and you could like be someplace that's not exactly your work. So
that's, you know, that's neat. And the thing that's really like extra neat about that is it's a cruise ship, right? There's only so much space. So the fact that they're, that Disney is able to, you know, have so many different dedicated crew areas that are just for like crew to enjoy and relax in spaces, I think that's really important. I think that's really also awesome that they have a role, of course, for like the crew to be able to do things and kind of be humans and not just be workers in this, you know, floating thing. It's got to be so important for morale and so important for like teamwork and camaraderie and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and of course, and Disney does it. Why would they?
even sometimes they would organize where they would do like a crew only showing of the Broadway style shows.
Oh.
Where it would be after hours, and they would get the theater cast to put on shows just for crew members. Or if there was a new Disney movie that came out, that we would get on board, they would have crew only showings of those on board the ship, so you could still feel like you're getting something special.
That's such a small thing that they can do too that makes such a big difference.
Right, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I got to ask you about the navigator, because you said that you worked a little bit on the guest communications, the navigator, which I've been on a Norwegian cruise and I've been on a Carnival cruise, and both have their versions of this. It's basically like your planner for the day that they drop off every day or whatever.
Yep.
How much, I mean, obviously you were working on this, so there was a lot of work to do on it. How often did things change on that? And how much stuff did you have to change on a daily basis with that?
I mean, if you think about, Mother Nature is a crazy thing. you're at sea, so sometimes you get hit with storms. Or, I mean, I've sailed through a couple of hurricanes. not pretty experiences.
I wouldn't think
and
so.
Sometimes it might look like a beautiful day, but the current's just too strong to bring you into port. Mm-hmm. So you went from having a port day, which when you have a port day, there's very limited activities on board because a majority of people are going to be off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you just went from having a day where there was pretty much nothing planned on board, and then there's a storm and you can't go into port. Now everyone's staying on the ship and you got to figure out, okay, well, how are we going to entertain these people? So it gets pretty crazy. So it can go from everything being pretty planned out and straightforward to me getting a phone call from the cruise director at like 4 a.m. Like, we're not going to make it into port. We got to reprint everything that we've done and figure out what we're going to do to entertain our guests.
Oh my gosh.
Just print all that stuff on the ship.
Yeah, we had a number of printers on board, and I had to learn how to service them, because if we were at sea and something goes wrong with one of our printers, it's like, well, there's no one here to help me. So
well,
I got,
have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we did have technicians that would come on in certain ports to help us for serious things, but you learn really quickly how to handle things yourself. We print a majority of things on board, everything that is more of a last minute print job. Now if there's like marketing materials and stuff that might be printed on shore and delivered on board the ship, but like the navigator, things that would change during a cruise or might need to be done on the fly during a cruise, we print all of that on board, and we have our own onboard print shop.
That's really interesting, because I honestly thought
room full of papers.
it may be different. Maybe the cruise lines I've been on do it this way, but I always thought that, like, okay, so you're on a 7-day cruise. So day one, this is the schedule. When we have a day one next week, it's going to be the same schedule. We're just going to change the date at the top. And like, there wouldn't be much, you know what I mean? Like, on a 7-day cruise, here's the 7 days. We've planned it out. That's how it is. Done.
Well, with our assistant cruise directors and cruise directors, we really take into account guest feedback. And even during a cruise, I might have the cruise director come up to me and be like, you know, I've been talking to a lot of our guests and they're feeling this about this thing, or they're a little disappointed about our characterings. Let's give them some more character offerings. So then we would make changes on the fly that way too. So cruise by cruise, like a lot of things might be the same, but we do make tweaks on the fly to kind of flow with guest experience and what our guests are saying about it.
Wow. And this is why Disney's the best.
I was going to say this. Yeah, that might be a like specific to Disney thing, because that seems like a lot. I mean, you don't think of it as being like, oh, we'll just throw a couple characters out here. No big deal. Oh, no. Yeah. You have to communicate that you're doing that and let everyone know, you know, so it's not
I became
simple.
A coffee drinker on board.
I can't imagine why, if you're getting calls at 4 a.m. saying, yeah, so today's not going to go as planned. You got to change everything.
So did you have like I guess this kind of works for any of your stuff, but on board or stuff you do now, like what's the tool that you use to do all of this stuff? Do you use, you know, a desktop computer? Do you use a tablet? Do you use like what's your tools?
I do everything on the computer in my current role. They give me like a large digital tablet that I get to draw on with a digital stylus, but I also have a standalone computer to accompany that. But I just use Adobe programs like InDesign, Photoshop, Illustrator.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Cause I assume the screen thing you're talking about is like what we've seen in like Disney documentary things that they're, you know, doing drawings and artistry on. Those things are super cool.
Yeah. It's those types of things. It's like a large giant iPad and you have a digital pen that you draw directly onto the screen with.
That's so cool.
Wow. So I'm going to kind of go slightly off tangent here. So being, you know, that this is your thing, this is like art is your thing. How do you feel about how was the transition from going like drawing on paper to then using technology and drawing on a tablet?
I mean, I never drew on paper professionally. It was only what I was doing as a kid.
He's only 33.
I don't know.
I mean, when I was a kid, I loved drawing and my parents would buy me cartooning books because originally I thought I wanted to be a cartoonist. And so I would make little cartoons and like comic strips and stuff. But I remember when I worked at the feature animation building for my professional internship at Hollywood Studios, they still had the Animation Academy. And I have always wanted to get, I mean, I'm kind of doing it now, but I've always been obsessed with Disney character art. Yeah. And I have a lot of drawing books about that. And I've studied it just personally a lot. And sometimes I would take a break for my lunch and just go to the Animation Academy and they just teach you to draw Disney characters. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would do to practice drawing Disney characters. And I completely forgot what your original question was.
That's okay. It's not good. It was so unrelated because I'm like, what was it like to draw on paper? And you're like, really. You're totally fine.
That. So I would draw on paper there. So starting my own personal journey with character art, character illustration, that's how I started was on paper. I bought a lot of those, and I mean, I guess it's not embarrassing, but those Learn to Draw Disney character books.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Those are amazing. They look like they're maybe marketed towards kids, but it's the masters of the craft teaching you how to do it in a let's break it down type of way.
Sure.
And so I would go to the Animation Academy, practice drawing. I would go home and I would do those Learn to Draw Disney character books and practice that. And then I would buy some of the books that some of the Disney greats would put out and read those and practice from those. And so I started drawing on paper with that. But as far as professionally, it's always been digital.
Gotcha. You know, I'm so glad that you brought up the Animation Academy. That is, I think that's like a gem in the Disney parks.
It is gone from Walt Disney World.
Amazing.
Still have it in Disneyland.
I know.
Well, they were doing, so when we were there, where was it? It was Rafiki's Planet Watch. They had drawing classes back there, but it was just different, right? Because I also think Rafiki's Planet Watch is something that a lot of guests unfortunately overlook. They don't really maybe realize what it is or that it's even there. If I could sit in that building, first of all, I just love that
building. It's a beautiful building.
Just because they have the illustrations kind of projected up all over.
And the music.
And I tell you, there's Disney magic because usually my drawing skills are like a stick figure. But sitting through those classes, you're right, the breaking it down, I'm always like shocked at what my creation looks like. I'm like, wow, that you could actually tell that's Mickey Mouse or, you know, whatever. And they do some really interesting, really intricate characters for those classes too.
And I remember my best friend, Kevin, and I, we both equally loved those classes. And one day we were like, let's just see if we can do like a Saturday and only do the Animation Academy.
Oh,
we packed lunches and snacks and drinks and we literally from park open to park close only did the Animation Academy just to see if we could do it and to be able to say that we did it. And that was a really fun day.
And the people there teaching everybody how to do stuff was like, you're still here in like six classes.
We would go there so often that we kind of knew everybody's names and what characters were their specialties and stuff. So we kind of got more into it than we probably should. We would know like everyone's schedules and be like, okay, well, this person is here at this time. They're going to probably draw like one of these characters. And I really want to draw that character. And we kind of like added it as like people try to get a collection of pictures with the different Disney characters. We try to do that type of thing, but like with, I haven't drawn Jack Skellington yet. And I think this person is going to be on this time. Maybe they'll teach us how to draw Jack today.
That's so cool.
Yeah, just really nerdy stuff.
You know what though?
They fit right in.
They put the schedules up and I just think it's so cool. And like never does it actually work out that way because I get distracted very easily, especially in a Disney park. But I always look at the schedules. I'm like, we should try and come back at, you know, whatever time because it's.
And I look at you like
Dante.
It's just drawing something.
Yeah, like, Tank's like, what? I'd
like to go on Splash Mountain today.
Yeah, right.
You.
It's a really amazing. Again, it's just a gem, and it's amazing because it's such a level, and it's just included in your park.
Well, and it's you know the legacy of the Walt Disney Company, like they're still doing some type of hand drawn.
I would seriously just sit there and watch them draw, and like not actually draw myself because it's really cool. It's really cool just watching the process.
I have to ask you a completely random question because of a picture I just saw on your Instagram.
Oh God!
He's like, oh.
So
man.
Tell me,
deleted that one.
No. You will have no idea where I'm going with this until I ask it. So, how comfortable are the Disney masks?
Oh,
because I have heard that they are amazing.
They are amazing. I wear it everywhere.
I would too.
I mean, the look of them aside, they're so comfortable. They're very lightweight. I like how it forms around my face. And the one that I have is kind of like cone shaped. So it comes away from my mouth and my nose. So I don't have it pressing against my nose and mouth as I'm talking and breathing. Plus, a lot of other masks, they just have like this thin, cheap metal that just goes by the nose. And after a while, it kind of like loosens, but they have like a really thick, like moldable piece that goes over the entire nose and around your cheek. So you get that solid seal. And I wear glasses, so it helps eliminate that fog. And it's lightweight, breathable. Like I love it.
I told Teresa when these came out, I said, I wish Disney would sell a version of these to guests because people would have bought them like crazy.
Oh, yeah, they would have,
Because I'd heard that they were comfortable. And when we went to Disney World, we asked a couple because they were rolling them out
while we were
there.
They were just, yeah.
So we caught a few cast members that had them and they all said that they were wonderful.
Yeah, they're great.
I love the fabric. I think the fabric's the design of the fabric's great.
Things that we never thought we would be talking about in
right?
a podcast.
Right? Exactly.
It's part of our world, you know?
Yeah.
So after
I was waiting for Dev and be like, so the fabric design, that was also my department.
After you left the cruise line, you came back as a contractor. So how is it different working as a contractor versus working directly for Mickey Mouse?
I mean, the team that I was on, they were so amazing that it felt like there was no difference at all besides what was probably listed somewhere in some computer system. So I didn't feel any different. Besides the fact that I couldn't get into the parks for free, it felt the exact same. I just felt like a member of the team and did the same work that everyone else was doing. And yeah, it was still great.
That's awesome. So we had just not even that long ago, I think it was back in March, we had Jeff on, and he actually used to be a Disney cast member at the Disney Institute. So when you said that you worked at the Disney Institute, I was like, both of us, Teresa and I, looked at each other like, we know this one. Anything fun and interesting about the Disney Institute as we're going through your history here?
One of the things I loved about Disney Institute is that it was our way of kind of spreading like what we do to other people, and kind of going like other companies and organizations would come to us and try to figure out what that Disney magic is, and like how can we bring that to what we're doing. And me being a sucker for what makes Disney Disney and the Disney history, and that like what makes Disney magical, it was awesome to be able to help other companies do that for themselves. Some of the ones that are public knowledge is Spirit Airlines. When they were rebranding, we helped them with their rebranding and their customer service training and their leadership training. We give them the tools and teach them how to use those tools, and what they do with them is to their own, but we help them develop that base that they can carry through in their company. And I really like that.
Yeah, I think that is neat. And again, another like thing that when people think of Disney and Disney parks, you don't think of classes that you can take to like do professional development and do things for, you know, what you can take back home and how to incorporate those practices into, you know, your company.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, and I should have mentioned too, it's not even by whole company or whole organization. They also do professional development stuff. So it was great.
Wow. Amazing. So I think after the Disney Institute, does that take us to your current role? Tell us about your current role and what it was like starting in the design for entertainment.
It was kind of a surreal experience because I was brought over by somebody that he works with broadcast production, but he was assisting Disney Institute with a lot of their broadcast needs. And I worked with him on a lot of projects, and he just saw what I was doing. And I was really trying to expand what I could do as an artist and a designer and learn new skill sets. So he helped provide me with some other projects that could give me like that expansion of skill set. And he just thought that I would like it was that whole Walt Disney moment where he saw something in me that I kind of saw in myself, but he believed in me and knew that, well, I'm doing fine here, but I could do amazing over here. And not only that, but I can do something for this team over here, you know? So he helped bring me over to my current role. I started off just doing, you know, when you go to a Run Disney race and there's all of those giant screens around the event spaces and going down the run pass and stuff, I would do all of the motion graphics for those signs.
Wow. That's what for example, for like those, how long does that take, like from start to finish for the creation process to make those happen?
It varies because we have style guides that we work from another team that develops what this specific race is going to look like as far as what what the look and design elements are. And then we work with that team to take that style mm-hmm. and translate it to what they need of us. And then there's a back and forth process. So it varies because we also work with developing content for sponsors for the races. So it's not really like, it's always going to take roughly around this. Sure. It varies.
Sure. That's so cool.
So your Instagram, you post so much cool stuff on Instagram.
Yeah. I don't have much time anymore to do it.
for those of you who are listening, it's Evan Disney Design on Instagram. Mm-hmm. A couple questions. One, the artwork that you post on your Instagram, is this just stuff that you do for fun, or is this stuff that's actually used places by Disney, or a mixture of both?
It's both. Before my current role, I had a lot. And nothing bad against anything. I had more free time to be able sure. to do that stuff. But now a lot more of my time is being taken up doing this more creative stuff. Before I got to do a lot of creative things in my role, but they weren't to this level or to the extent that I'm doing them now. So now when my brain is being used entirely for an entire day, for an entire week, for a month, doing this high intensity creative stuff, at the end of the day, I'm kind of like, you know what? I kind of don't want to draw today.
Yeah, you're like, I just want to relax.
Yeah, I kind of want to relax. So I'm not doing as much of that anymore, but it's a good mixture. Some of the stuff is used. Some of the stuff is just like I'm working throughout the day and I just happen to get an idea that pops in my head. And I'm like, you know what? I've got like an hour for lunch. Let me just draw something. And there was a period where I was doing some art. It was a Disney doodle series on the Disney Parks blog. And I got to do some stuff for Disneyland as well. I drew Oogie Boogie holding some Halloween candy for the one of the Halloween parties.
Oh,
that's right up Teresa's alley. She loved the Oogie Boogie.
Oogie Boogie Bash was fantastic.
So I got to do some of that stuff, and some of that's on my Instagram as well. It's a good mixture, and I like to post stuff that I do in my free time, stuff that I am able to post professionally, and just my life working and living at Walt Disney World.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Oh, so with your role now, some of your stuff, where can people see your work, or where does your work go? Like, I think you mentioned like the Disney Parks blog, I guess, like where when you create something that where does it go?
It can right now. It kind of goes everywhere.
Everywhere. My stuff's just everywhere.
like I did that. I drew Figment for that commercial, and that's
why.
So sometimes I feel like there's no, through line for what.
Sure. So it's not always like parks maps are always, you know, it's not your average, projects are kind of all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's an average day in the Evan, or in the day in life with Evan? It's always different. Like for the holidays, over in Epcot at the American Garden Theater, we did some Voices of Liberty shows, and we did some other shows there for the holidays, and I got to do the content that was on those signs, and I did the Tarzan and Jane for the Voices of Liberty show during the Festival of the Arts over there. My team did the holiday projections this last year for Cinderella Castle that transformed the castle into all these holiday looks. My team also created the new Christmas show before the pandemic, of course, but the new Christmas nighttime show at Magic Kingdom too. So
when you're designing these larger than life displays, how long does that take? I can't even imagine how long it takes from idea to then like seeing it in real life, and then what that feeling
probably
is.
Probably years.
Like, so for the Christmas show, did you like, what was that like to step into the park and see what your team had created, you know,
projected onto
the castle?
That was amazing. For the new Christmas projection show, that launched right when I joined the team. So I didn't really get to do any work on that new, and we work in project names, so I'm
sure,
like,
yeah.
What's the actual name of it?
Right, like, right.
Minnie's Merry Christmas Time. something like that. It was really cool to see that in person. It's absolutely amazing. And I got to play a small role in the last group of projections that we did for the holidays. The artwork was done by other amazing artists on my team, but I was brought in later on in the process to kind of do some technical work on the project. So where they were on it for a long time, I was on it for probably the last month or so. But going to see it with my wife and son in the park, oh my gosh, it was, it's an experience. It's a,
yeah.
Evan's the guy that came in at the last minute and still gets to put his name on it.
I always try to make sure I give credit to my team, because we have a lot of amazing people on my team that do amazing stuff. And for the types of projects that we get to do, it takes a lot of amazing people to print these things out. And I do not want anyone to think that I am the sole creditor. I am one of the cogs, a small cog in this large machine where there's all of these other artists who are small cogs that make this whole thing work. So
you know, it's amazing how many people
that I was going to say, it's amazing to think of that, right? How many people are all putting in these little pieces. And then again, back to what we were talking about earlier, how it's everything so cohesive and flows, and you have no idea that it was X amount of people that made this, you know, whatever it is thing that you're viewing as the guest. So Evan, what are some of your favorite past projects that you've worked on, or like whether it was, so it could even be something that maybe wasn't too, like it wasn't as grand as a projection show, but you know, maybe something that was very meaningful, or you know, what were some of your favorites?
Oh my gosh.
all of them, Teresa, they were all favorites.
this most recent Figment one was really cool, just because just the scale of it, as far as it being a nationwide commercial.
Yeah. But
also that I got to be like you, that I got to be in it, and I'm drawing a classic Disney character, but not only that, but to have Walt Disney Imagineering trust me with that character.
Yeah.
That was a very emotional project for me to be on, just because it's not just here's another commercial that Disney is kicking out. There's more to it than that. It's bringing life to a character that normally doesn't get life brought to it, and having the weight of that entrusted with me, like that was amazing. So that was definitely one of my tops. That one for sure. There's multiple versions of it. There's a really long one that's about like 2-something minutes long, and I'm in that one. And there's like a 15-second version, and I'm in that one. So there's like various different lengths and variations of that commercial, but I'm in a couple of those variations. So
very cool.
I drew Figment in person in the studio, hand drawn, and I also did a digital version of him that did various poses. I did the key poses, and then passed those key poses over to animators, and the animators did the animation on them. So that was amazing.
That's fun.
So cool that there's the levels of a project, right? Because there's the key stuff, and then there's, you know, like when you do, some of our listeners may or may not know this, but like when you do like computer animation, you do like keyframes, and then the computer can like fill in the stuff in between. So you basically, like if you have a ball that you want to go from here to here, you just say ball here, you click a keyframe and you put it over here, and then the computer like generates all that stuff in the middle. With animation, with like traditional animation, I assume you got to have like somebody sit there and draw all of those different things.
Aside from the commercial, are there any like just really cool experiences or things that you got to be a part of throughout your career at Disney that maybe would have been something that the general guest, or that something that you wouldn't have normally been able to do?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I got to do with Disney Cruise Line, but it wasn't really job related. It was just the lifestyle of working on the ship.
Sure, yeah.
So that was amazing. We do have internal recognition called Magic Backstage that any cast member can apply to. And if you win, then you get like various experiences from, you might get a one night stay at the Grand Floridian, or you might get to do this or do that. And a couple of those, and again, that's not job related, but it comes with being a cast member. I've gotten a couple of those where I got a detailed backstage tour of the Haunted Mansion, and I got to like throughout all the scenes and wow. and hear the history about it and touch everything, and that was and also do one at Spaceship Earth where I got to walk the track at Spaceship Earth and again like go into those scenes and mm-hmm. and hear about the ins and outs of the attraction and the design process. And I mean, with my role with Disney Institute, I got to do some of those experiences too, because we tried to, as part of our on-site learning experiences, if we had a key thing that we were trying to help people learn or understand, we would help drive that forward with field experiences where we would teach something in our courses, but then bring the guests into the park and experience something that ties back to what we're trying to say. So I got to do some backstage field experiences with that, like over at Kilimanjaro Safaris and over at the American Adventure attraction over at Epcot. Go backstage and see how that works, which they're still running on like 1980s technology, because they were like, we don't need to update the technology because it runs perfectly like this. So it's like stepping back in time and you're seeing all of this stuff, and it's amazing how like the function of that attraction, and also going backstage and seeing all of the, what are they called, like the mannequin heads and how they do cleanup processes and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I look
at that attraction and I can never figure out how all that fits back there.
Right. Yeah.
it's all orchestrated so well, and it's like everything is stacked and organized very specifically to get it to fit and work and function properly. But those types of experiences come with being a cast member are awesome, because again, I'm a Disney fan also. So being able to do things like that and have it be somewhat related to my job or just be a perk of what I do is amazing to me.
You know, when we talked to Devin last week, I was like, oh, I'd like to have his job. He does all this cool stuff. And now I'm listening to your job, and you're like, you've done a little bit of everything. So now I feel like, man, I wish I could just jump into your head and replay your experiences of working for Disney, because that sounds so amazing, really all the different amazing opportunities you've had. And, you know, in speaking with you, you could tell that, you know, you really, you know, appreciate and you feel very, you know, thankful for having these, you know, experiences that not everybody gets to have. So that's really awesome.
Thank you. I kind of look back at, like, sometimes you take a look back at your life and you're like, how did I get here? Because there are so many minor like decisions that we make every day that somehow lead us to where we are today. And looking back at my life, I'm just kind of like, wow, I just walked through a minefield of hopefully correct choices that got me to where I am today. And I just don't know how it happened, but here I am. So.
So I think we just have one last question.
I have one more question too.
Two questions before we wrap up. So are there, you kind of were touching on this with the last answer, but have there been any like really cool perks or any maybe awards that you have been given during your time at Disney?
I haven't gotten any awards. I mean, I got to do a couple artist signings for some special events that we did with Disney Institute because of some of the illustration work I had done for the Disney Parks blog and other areas. I got to create limited edition art pieces
that were
given out to participants at these various events. And then I did an artist signing and that was cool, but it was another example of me being able to draw a character and I worked with Disney Consumer Products on these approval processes, but working with Disney Consumer Products on getting these characters just to like company standard, that was a lot of fun. And then also being able to share those final pieces with other guests and doing the signings and talking to them about their favorite characters, like that was really cool.
Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this because some people get iffy about it. I feel like you'll probably talk about it because you post so much on your Instagram about it. But what is it like to be able to share this Disney, you know, your Disney love and being at Disney World and all that with your son, because one of the things I noticed a lot about your Instagram is you post a lot, you know, with of going to the parks with your son and doing all these cool experiences. So can you talk a little bit about what that's like?
Yeah, my son loves Disney so much, and he's five, and I mean, we just went to Animal Kingdom for the first time yesterday in a long time because we haven't been able to go, and I took him yesterday, and he was just so excited. It was almost like the first time going again. we went to Animal Kingdom, and there's that area where you walk through before you get to Tree of Life, where it's a couple animals and some waterfalls and stuff. And he said he wanted to see every animal and every waterfall, and he just got so excited. And to him, I sometimes get worried that this might become too normalized for him. Because I want it to be special for him for the rest of his life. And I want him to understand how special it is that he gets to do these types of things. But he treats it like it's special every single time. As a parent, to me, being able to give him these types of experiences and to share my love for Disney and my job, and being able to go and see something that I worked on and share that experience with him, it's extremely special.
He must think you're like the coolest dad ever.
I mean, he'll tell you otherwise, probably. No, he's in that phase where oh, daddy's so stinky, like that's so. But no, yeah, he thinks that his life is great.
That's awesome.
And not that. He doesn't take it for granted, even at five. He understands how special it is.
Does he want to work for Disney in the future?
He wants to be a garbage man because he loves garbage trucks.
he can be a garbage man for Disney.
He gets really excited about recycling day because he just recently learned about recycling. So every recycling day, he helps me get all the recycling ready for the road. And so he will tell you he wants to be a garbage man.
That's so adorable. Well, I think that ties in with my question. Like, what like an indescribable perk to be able to share your career and share your passion and your love for Disney with your family and with your son, and to be able to go have these experiences and like have this have your life be magic. You're like a Disney family. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. And my wife works for the Four Seasons now, but she started her career with Disney too. So that's instilled in our family here. Mm-hmm. And being able to be surrounded by Disney and then also take those types of vacations, like we love to go to Hilton Head in South Carolina every year, and going to Disneyland Paris and Disneyland, and it's just so ingrained in our family, and we feel so lucky.
Can you adopt us?
No. Can you adopt us?
move to Orlando.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
it's humid enough in the Midwest.
I had an opportunity to almost move to Florida. And I was like, I don't know.
So it's hot. It's hot and humid for about half the year, but the other half of the year is purely perfect weather. So it's like you get a little hot and sweaty, but then you get picture perfect weather the rest of the year.
Well, there you go. Maybe that sounds like a good trade-off.
Yeah. I don't know. I moved from California that had pretty nice weather to the Midwest, California, where we actually have seasons, which is great. I like snow still, and most people here don't like snow still, but I like snow still. But maybe I should just be a snowbird. I should have a place and in the nice weather months of Florida, go down there.
Yeah, do that.
Evan, thank you so much for your time. And our final question for you, since you have worked in the parks, but if you could go back to work in the parks, and you can even make up your own role, but what would you like to do if you could work at Disneyland? And we'll be nice and say either any of the Disney parks. It doesn't have to be Disneyland.
I mean, I think about this with retirement sometimes. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever retire, but we'll see. I mean, if I was at retirement age, I sometimes think about going back and just doing custodial again, or just being one of those guys that drives the boat back and forth across the seven seas over by Magic Kingdom, and just working part time and just talking about my life and talking about Disney and hearing about people's experiences with Disney and how excited their kids are and their whole family is for their for what they're about to do today or what they've done today. And
I thought he was going to be like working at the, he's going to bring back the Animation Academy and like animate in the middle of the group so he could talk with all of them.
that would be cool too, but there's just something kind of, or to drive the train. That'd be cool.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That is a good one.
Trains are so freaking cool. I love Disney trains. I'm sure you're happy to get your train back, hopefully, soon once Tron.
It's been so long. Yeah. My son loves that train. So yeah, as sooner it comes back, the better. Because we.
Is the people mover back yet?
Yeah.
It just recently came back, which has been giving us our train like fixes for a while. Same with the monorail. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to go to you just got to go to Animal Kingdom and ride Rafiki's little train out there. That's
fun. Yeah. Jonah, my son's name is Jonah. He loves that train as well. He's obsessed with trains. So sometimes we just ride the monorail around all day.
I would do it with you guys.
Yeah, I was gonna say the monorail at the Magic or at the Walt Disney World Resort is. It's so cool to me that Disneyland, it's more of an attraction, but it's an actual legit means of transportation there. So
I love how at Disneyland though, it brings you through. I mean, Epcot does a little bit too, but I love how it brings you through the park.
That's true.
And that monorail is beautiful. I love how it's either some or all of those seats face outward. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the view. Whereas, at Walt Disney World, you're kind of facing the person across from you.
Yeah, that's true.
I wish that we had the Disneyland monorail where we got to look out and enjoy the scenery a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. And
yours has air conditioning, which ours doesn't. So I don't think that would work in Florida.
Plus, you get to go through the Contemporary. That's pretty darn cool.
And the cone and the head cone thing have air conditioning, but all the rest don't, which is why the windows are always open.
Mm-hmm. Have you been on the Skyliner yet at Walt Disney?
Yes.
That was amazing.
It feels good.
That was fun. There was moments I was a little terrified because the wire was kind of bouncy. I'm like, why are we?
Well, and then we stopped at one point. And Teresa was like, and it was kind of like the wind was blowing a little bit, so we were kind of rocking.
Going side by side.
You're like, I've been on Tower of Terror. I know what happens next.
Yeah. Well, and then I'm questioning everything. I'm like, how is this thing actually attached to this wire? And I'm thinking of all the like worst possible scenarios.
Yeah. I love the Skyliner.
But it was
system.
Great. It was fun. As long as I didn't overthink.
I hope that once the parks recover from the COVID losses that they'll expand it to some of the other resorts because I think that's something that people really enjoy. And it's obviously a lot cheaper than building a monorail, even though I would like to just have a monorail go to everything.
You just reminded me of one of my favorite things I've ever gotten to do as a perk from being a cast member.
Ooh.
My first time going out to Disneyland, because I worked for Disney, I got to go and visit the animation studios and Walt Disney, like the Walt Disney production lot. So I got to go, like, walk that whole lot. It was amazing, and go into the Disney archives area, and I could have spent an eternity there.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That was definitely one of the coolest things that has ever come with working for Disney, is going out and seeing the old studios and the new animation studios.
Talk about history. Wow.
I think what you need to do, Evan, is put in a job requisition and be like, I need to do some research. Yeah. So I need to go to the archives and look at some things.
And I need to go to the ink and paint department. I really need to figure out those colors.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Seeing those, they had some multi-plane cameras there too. My God. I wanted to touch everything. And I know that. I know there's like some cartoon or some comic out there where like someone keeps touching something and then the person comes up and says, "Don't touch it." And that would that would probably be me, because I would want to touch everything.
He's like picking up all the paints and like dipping his fingers in them to see what the colors are.
Yeah, I was going to say, does your son know not to touch things, or does he look at you and go, "Touch everything"?
He's pretty good about boundaries and rules. So I got lucky in that aspect.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yes.
See,
yes.
Saying, "Dad, stop touching everything."
I know, exactly.
That's too fun.
Have you been to the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco?
Yes, I did. Because
they have a multi-plane camera there too.
Yes, and I went there when they had a Mary Blair exhibit, which was amazing as well. We were there for maybe 3 or 4 hours at the Walt Disney Family Museum, and unfortunately, that's all we had time for. But man, I wanted to spend all day in there. It was so cool, and we made the extra little trip up to Pixar because I thought that my Blue ID magic would help me get into Pixar Studios, but unfortunately not. But I got a little picture out in front of it. But yeah, going to the Family Museum. Every Disney fan needs to go to the Family Museum. It is so cool.
It is so cool. And of course, being a Disneyland podcast, one of my favorite things there is the model of Disneyland of Walt's dreams.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's breathtaking.
Yeah, it's really cool. I didn't spend enough time in there either because I wanted to read everything and I didn't. So
you're like, "I'm sorry, what time do you open and close?" Okay.
Seriously.
We'll try and squish it all in.
Seriously.
One of my next trips, I want to do a tour of Walt's apartment. I got to I did a tour of the Dream Suite through some, I forget how that even happened, but somebody that I worked with knew somebody there and they just happened to be like, "Yeah, I'll give you a tour today." So I saw the Dream Suite, but I need a connection with Walt's apartment. I don't
know. I was going to say, you've got connections everywhere, Evan.
I know. I've got, that's one I don't have.
And the Lily Bell. You need to ride in the Lily Bell too.
Train car. That's an option.
That's an option.
Yeah, they used to offer it as part of the tour.
Yep. They I think it's only part of like tours now.
Walt's footsteps tour, I think.
They used to have it out every once in a while, and if you were lucky, then you would just, you know, Disney magic would happen and you would be able to request and be on it. My closest was I rode next to it. I was in the last car attached to it. That's as close as I've gotten.
That's awesome.
But it was cool.
Next time I go.
So cool. Yeah. I'm sure you'll find someone. You'll find someone. You'll get in there, I'm sure.
Have you done it? Is it awesome?
I haven't.
No, but I've heard
heard amazing things about it though.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those where it's like, "No photography, please. I'm going to be crying."
Yeah, there you go, right? Yeah, that's just, yeah, too much.
Yeah.
Evan, thank you so much for spending a good chunk of your time with us this evening and talking about everything.
Yeah.
We had such a great time, and I'm sure that our listeners are just going to love hearing all about your experiences.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I had a great time. This just flew by because it was so much fun just talking about Disney. So
I feel like when you get people that like Disney, it just, that happens.
It does, yeah.
Hours later. And
I was like, "What? We just started, right?"
Right. Too funny. Yes. Thank you, Evan, so much. Again, thank you for giving us a peek at what your role, like what your past roles were, and a little peek of what your current role is. It's something that, again, you know, that we kind of take for granted, but it's a really important and really amazing part of like what makes Disney, like the Disney experience, what it is. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. A lot of passionate people care about your experience every day. So I hope everybody thinks about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now I've got to figure out, can I go to guest services and write like a cast compliment card to be like, "That graphic was amazing.
That graphic was great."
I'm sure that, like,
can you figure out who did it? Because they need
it. I'm sure like City Hall's like, "I don't even know where to send this."
Too funny. So
well,
Evan,
we do get some of that feedback. So
that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's great to know.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. The menus can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
So much thought and thinking and doubt and wavering, and soon there might be some head slapping for questions.
Okay.
All right. First one from listener Matthew J was, what colors were the original People Mover cars? We were both so close to getting all four, but just missed it. Red, blue, yellow, and green.
So we made
like
up
the tealish
teal. So
one.
So teal is green.
Teal is blue. It was probably like a faded blue.
Red. Oh, red, blue. What'd you say? Red,
red blue, on. Yellow, green.
I need to look this up now.
No orange, no purple.
Oh, they were actually like the full color because I just remembered the stripes. Oh, yeah, yellow.
Oh, the green's like a mint green.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking teal, probably. Hold on a second. I'm trying to find the 80s.
You just see these things and you're like, I swear I remember it like this.
Well, because see, I remember. Look, purple. So were you going off the original? Is that
original?
Oh, okay. Because there's a purple one right here on my screen, James.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
So what you're telling me is I need to listen to the specifics of the question and not just throw out things.
Yes. The listeners and I choose our words wisely.
Yeah, because you know that I don't listen very well.
Credit anyway. Matthew J. gets all the credit for that one. All right. Question number two came from Jill M. What attraction was designed simultaneously on both U.S. coasts?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if there are more answers to it, but you didn't get the one that Jill was thinking of, which was Midway Mania.
Oh, good one.
I didn't even know that.
Dang, that was good.
So, yeah, but
Astro Blasters would have been maybe
I do
one
have to respect the two of you for coming up with both attractions from Galaxy's Edge, because, I mean, there's got to be a lot of truth to that one. Third question, what order do the Princess Boats take center stage in Fantasmic? Points on the board for the two of you. Princesses are indeed Belle, Ariel, then Rapunzel, who did replace Snow White, as you correctly mentioned.
Good job.
Question number four from Donna S. What is the average speed of the Matterhorn bobsleds? You two need to put your foot down a little bit more. Not 12 miles per hour, 18 miles per hour. Those drops really get you moving.
Chris said that he was so sure of both of his wrong answers.
Man, that 35 would feel like whipping if Chris was right on that one. So.
I mean, maybe, I don't even know if it peaks at 35.
It's only like in a couple little down spots does it get fast, because otherwise it just kind of whips you around.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's super fast.
Do you have a side that you like better? I think I like the...
I think you like the...
right side.
I like the fantasy... Yeah, the Fantasyland side.
Because that has the one where you come around the one corner and you go down while the other track goes over you.
Yep.
Because I feel like it's more thrilling.
Yep, yep. I don't like... Well, and I don't like the... Because I think the Tomorrowland side, I get wet on that side.
Oh.
Like, when we splash through the water at the end, somehow, like, I don't know if it dips further down into the water, but I always get wet.
You know what I think? I think we're going to have to do some scientific testing when we're there and do both.
For science!
But I also would like to ride it again. I have not ridden it at night for a really long time, and I'd like to ride it at night again because Tomorrowland looks really nice at night when you're flipping around up there.
I'm pretty sure we only rode the Fantasyland side when I was there.
Probably, so we should ride both when we're there.
Yeah,
this time.
I think I'm going to need a couple of go-throughs.
Yeah, couple go-throughs. Day and night, so four times of the Matterhorn. Got it.
And our last question, our bonus question this week, on July 7, 2003, Disney legend Chuck Abbott passed away safely at his home in Utah. He was one of the original Disney cast members and helped with several attractions, including working with Walt on Pirates. During his time there, he was named Foreman of the Year for his work on which attraction? Teresa, should have stuck to your instinct. It was the Matterhorn.
Dang it!
In 1969.
No.
Tried to prime you with that
you
question
always
before it.
Go by your instincts, because I feel like your instincts are what gets you good.
Dang it. So close.
I gotta tell you, he's a legend I didn't know much about. Let alone there's a lot of legends I didn't know much about, but I stole this from a website about this Disney history, where he was also the foreman for the opening of Space Mountain and returned to the Matterhorn for the big refurb that happened in 1978. He was also the foreman of the Submarine Voyage, Jungle Cruise, Mine Train Through Nature's Wonderland, many other attractions, and notably in 1987, he conceived and initiated the cast member Seeing Eye Dog Fund, which became a highly successful volunteer group.
Wow, very neat. So we got one right, and one and two. I got two right on the four colors. You got one right on the four colors. We sucked this week.
I'd give you points for teal on that one. I feel like that's kind of
okay.
What about
I get
purple, Mister?
Three and two.
Not an original.
Whatever. You know what? We need to
made up
the,
orange.
We need to when
and
we
look.
Get,
I scribbled out blue.
When
dang
we
it,
get when we get back in August, Teresa, yeah. we need
and
to
green.
Do.
I scribbled out blue and green.
I know.
We need to do reverse Trivia Land with the producers and give them some piece of their own medicine.
Just wait for all the notes that Vern's bound to take this trip too.
Oh my goodness!
No.
I forgot about that.
Oh,
you two
no.
are going to sit together and cohort in the back with your. You're going to be like that evil. We can't let them sit together,
no.
Teresa.
No.
What a great line of questioning, really getting them thinking and stumping them on a good chunk of them. We love your questions and we'll love to ask more of them, especially once we get back from our trip to the park. Help us out. You can send producer Vern and I an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We'll be back next week with stuff we're excited for and the week after from the parks.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And I hope we see you guys there.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.